Welcome to the Chris Saylor Show. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by Princeton women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor. Coach, welcome.
Thanks, Jerry. Good to be here.
So it's I thought it would be good to have a sort of not quite the end of the fall season, but sort of the end of the fall season podcast to talk about how the fall has gone, where your team is, and what your thoughts are as you start to think about the 2019 season, which will be here in the blink of an eye, as I can't believe it's almost November, but welcome.
Thanks.
So before we talk about the team and the season, I thought the specific fall, I thought I would go back to maybe the evolution of the fall since you've been here. Is it, maybe even going back further than that. So like when you played, was there an out of season?
Oh, when I played, there was never an out of season.
Everybody played field hockey?
Everybody played field hockey or soccer or another sport, and you really didn't start up until Feb 1, and I believe they had fall ball when I first got here, but again, I was coaching field hockey, so we'd have some practices maybe in the mornings or on a day off, but you really didn't scrimmage at that point, and most of your team was playing another sport, even into, you know, probably the late 1990s.
So when you graduated from, when you were at Harvard, and as you got ready to graduate, did you know you wanted to be a coach?
Yeah, I thought I wanted to be a coach. Initially, I worked at Choate Rosemary Hall School in Connecticut. I thought I'd be a teacher and a coach, and I did that for 3 years.
What'd you teach?
I taught in the behavior and ethics department. So it was some general psychology courses as well as like health-related courses, things like that.
And what made you leave there?
I think I enjoyed coaching and I enjoyed the high school level, but I really wanted a more competitive situation and I thought I wanted to get into the college ranks. And so I went up to UMass and did a grad degree in sport management and helped out up there. And then I got an internship down at Penn to complete my degree working with the AD down at Penn. And while I was there, I also worked with the field hockey and lacrosse programs.
Who was the AD then? Craig Little?
No. Well, interestingly, Charles Harris.
Charles Harris, that's right.
Hired me for the internship. And a couple weeks in, he took the Arizona State job. And so Paul Rubicam got the job. And then I worked most of the year with him.
I should remember Charles Harris because my roommate at Penn my senior year, his first name was Charles, his middle name was Harris. And So that was always like the AD was the same as he was. Were there, I guess at the time either there were not a lot of opportunities for women to get into coaching or a ton of opportunities to get into women for coaching because there weren't a lot of women coaches at the time.
Yeah, but there just weren't that many programs overall. I mean, when I first got the Princeton job, there might have been 33, 34 Division I level teams. So it was pretty competitive to break in. And now that the sport has grown at every division of the collegiate game, there's just so many more opportunities for women to get into coaching.
When you look back at it today, because when I first met you, you were the assistant field hockey coach and the head lacrosse coach. I mean, can you even believe that's how it was?
No, and I often wonder how I ever did it because, you know, in the summer I did field hockey camps and lacrosse camps and, you know, you had field hockey preseason. And I look back now with everything that I do now, I just wonder how I managed to coach both. But like I said, a lot of...
Well, look at Sharon Fluger. I mean, at TCNJ,
she's still doing it. Absolutely. My hat's off to her. I'm not quite sure how she manages that. But back, you know, back then, so many of our athletes, the core of the team, were two-sport players. And so you really were with those kids almost the entire year and got to be, you know, influence them in terms of how they competed and throughout their whole year at Princeton.
So one thing I've always wondered about is, you know, obviously Title IX greatly accelerated the equal opportunities for women in sports. I've always wondered where women's athletics would be without Title IX, because I would like to think that society without Title IX still would have evolved to the point where I can't imagine that we would be sitting here today saying to the women, well, you know, we're only letting you have the fields and the athletic trainers and the, you know, all the other things that the men's team have because it's the law. Like, I would like to think that we've evolved beyond that.
Well, you would like to think that, but I don't think we would have come nearly as far and as fast without Title IX. And you saw all the, you know, challenges to Title IX along the way. And 20 years after the law was first written, even within the Ivy League, you had lawsuits, Title IX lawsuits. So,
I mean, have you read about something? Like, do you ever read about the Brooklyn College case? the Title IX case there?
I have, but I don't know all the details off the top of my head.
It's extraordinary the extent to which the men's teams and the women's teams were still being treated differently, even at that point.
And I think at many, you know, different schools, you would still find that to be the case today. Not in every area, but in some areas, there is still treatment that's not quite quite the same. So, you know, I think without that, I think society has evolved, and I think men who have traditionally run college athletic programs and sports throughout the generations, they want their daughters to have the same opportunity, and they recognize the value for that. I think that was really a huge change in terms of society in looking at sports for girls and women overall. But I really think you really had to fight a lot of, a lot of cultural stereotypes and certainly at the start of Title IX, it was a constant battle.
So what ended up changing here was that you lobbied to not have to coach the field hockey team, or was that?
Well, I don't know that I lobbied. I think we went into Beth Bosman, who was the head field hockey coach and my assistant in lacrosse. We approached the athletic director at the time, Gary Walters, I guess it was at that time, and said, hey, look, we no longer want to coach two sports. And it really wasn't an issue at that point. So
I think that's one of the first things he did when he became athletic director was like a sort of an overview of women's coaches and coaching salaries and things like that.
Well, that was something that was initiated by the women's coaches. We actually banded together and wrote a letter to the athletic director and said that we believed that we were, you know, underpaid compared to our male counterparts and wasn't in keeping with gender equity and in the values of the university. And he did, to his credit, undertook a salary review with human resources. And I think all or most all of the women coaches got a significant bump up in salary at that point.
So fast forward to now where and we're talking about fall practices. At some point, the fall practices have evolved to the current place that they're at. Do you remember, like, it's been, like, do you remember what it was like in the 90s even?
I remember we would go out across the lake and we'd play on the grass over there with all the goose droppings and, you know, we'd really practice with the kids who weren't playing another sport. So we'd get the sticks in their hands and do a little bit. And then slowly we were allowed to have one competition and then two competitions. And now we get three competitions within the Ivy League. And outside of, you know, we've always had the 12 dates. That rule's evolved a little bit to now allow for 24 hours. So you can expand. You don't have to have every practice be a two-hour practice. But, you know, even the individuals, so the period of time that we're in now, you know, back in the day, you couldn't have any contact with your players outside of either your 12 fall practices or your season. And then that evolved to allow up to 2 hours on a voluntary basis with a player or up to four players at a time. But you could only have four kids on one field at any one time. You couldn't have different groups. And then you could have different groups. And then it went to six. And then finally it went to you can have as many kids as you want for the 2 hours.
Do they still call it technically individuals, or does that have a name?
Well, I don't know that anyone really calls it individuals, but, you know, that's...
So the Ivy League... So I've seen from my son, like, what, you know, he plays at Sacred Heart, and I've seen what the rules are for out-of-season practice for them compared to the Ivy League. And I honestly think the Ivy League rules are much saner when it comes to how much time they spend in out-of-season and practice. You know, is there enough time for you? Because, you know, I mean, you're going to compete against everybody who's, you know, playing by a different set of rules. Is it enough time for you to accomplish everything you need to accomplish in the fall? Because I think they have too much.
Somewhere in between. I don't know that I'd want 7 weeks of 5 days a week. I don't think you need that, five tournaments and competitions. But I think somewhere in between is really where the sweet spot lies. I think as coaches, you know, we had three competitions this fall plus an alumni game. So out of the 24 hours, you know, that was a significant amount of time.
And those are dates.
Those are dates, yeah. And so it's tough. It's tough to get ready to compete in the fall when you have a lot of new kids, freshmen and returners who are taking on new roles. and you're really limited in your practice time. You know, so just the way you teach, you have to put in systems kind of right away, even before you've taught a lot of the basic fundamentals and skills. So fall for us, since we play so early, is really getting in some of our offensive and defensive systems, a man up, man down look, you know, things like that. And now that the fall is over and the games are done, we have to know enough to be able to play. How are we going to ride? How are we going to attack? How are we going to defend? And now that that piece is over, we really work more on some of the, you know, the small nuances of the game and the offensive and defensive techniques that are going to bring kids success.
So you would ideally like to reverse that?
Ideally, you'd love to reverse that and do the small pieces first and then the bigger pieces as you're building up. But because of the way the fall is and when the games are and the limited practices that you have, you know, as a coach, that's just how, you know, we have to implement it. And certainly you're doing some fundamentals in your practice as well. But because of those games, you would approach those practices different than you would otherwise.
So let's talk a little bit about your team then and how the fall went. And not a lot of players lost to graduation. So you bring back a large group, probably more so than most years, I would think. And, you know, I assume that's a help. But then, interestingly, you mentioned kids in returning players in new roles. And talk about some of them and...
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the fall was good for us, a good eye-opener for us. I think, you know, we return, like you said, we return a lot of kids, and I think everyone has really high expectations for the year ahead and high goals that they want to achieve, which is awesome. I think what our fall ball showed us is that we have a lot of work. We have a lot of work in front of us, and that's a good thing. You know, we're not close to being a finished product. I think we learned so much from the competition that we had, the tournaments that we played. And it's hard for us to be as good as everybody else when we haven't had the practices in the fall. And so I think that sometimes shows in the competitions. But over the course of the next couple of months and getting to continually practice with the team, and then running some captain's practices on their own, we think we're going to be ready to go by February. But in terms of, you know, the individuals, you know, we've had some injuries. So that kind of impacted our fall a little bit too. Noni Anderson, our, you know, one of our top defenders and the fastest kid on our team, has been out all fall. Testa Orsi missed our two fall tournaments. She was our leading scorer in our first two games. We have Mary Murphy, a returning starter, who's been out all fall, and assorted other kids who were injured at different times. And that's been great to see how other kids might develop. I think we're trying to find someone or a combination of kids who will play a good feeding role for us behind, so we can take advantage of Kyla, who's so good with her cutting inside. But kids like Allie Rogers on the offense is going to play a big role for us. Elizabeth George on the offense. Kyla Sears.
Elizabeth George looks unbelievable.
Elizabeth George goes hard in everything she does. Yeah, and she's just working on, you know, the nuances of her game, just being able to finish that shot after she makes that dodge, and really the decision making on the field. But she's a powerful kid who, you know, gives it everything she has every moment that she's on the field.
One player who you need a big year from, who looks like she has improved a lot, is Sam Fish.
Yeah.
Did you know I was going there? Or?
Yeah, I figured. I think Sam has, you know, really been a rock for us this fall. I think she's playing really well. She's a kid. She's a real student of the game. She likes to do a lot of video.
She's the goalie, by the way.
And she, you know, she had a lot of opportunity to see the ball in game situations this fall, which has been great. I mean, she backstopped us really well. She's been aggressive on her clears, getting the ball out of her stick early. You know, still working on some basics of her technique, just trying to shorten her stance a little bit. Her stance can get a little wide. She can get a little bouncy, but you know, just little things she's working to correct. But she's been phenomenal, seeing the ball really well, and with her in the cage, you know, for the foreseeable future, I think that bodes well for us.
So one thing that always fascinates me about the start of a new season is there a player who, you know, is a returning player who hasn't played a lot in the past who may have made a jump? Do you see anybody like that, or is it too early to really know?
I think it's a little early to know.
And it's hard because this year there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of
there's not a lot of yet. Yeah, there's not a lot of open opportunities. We do have the one position within the attack that we have a number of kids kind of that we're looking at, a Julia Haney, who started for us at times before, Laura Pansini, a Katie Riley, you know, some of those kids are getting more looks, have gotten some good looks in the fall. So that would be kind of one position. And then we've got a lot of freshmen. Our midfield is our most inexperienced unit. We have Catherine Hallett returning and Annie Corey. And beyond that, we have five. We have a ton of freshman middies. And so, you know, they've been getting a lot of time. And it's, I think that's the toughest position to come in and play right away because you got to learn the systems on both ends and get really comfortable with the rides and the clears. But there's a lot of potential in that group.
One thing I've seen from freshman middies in the past is that part's hard, but when they bring athleticism, it really ups everybody else's tempo and everybody else's intensity and brings a lot of competition within the team to get on the field.
Absolutely. And we have some really athletic middies in that freshman group. Oh, and the other middie, we have four freshmen. Izzy Mengen is a senior middie for us who missed her first two seasons with two knee injuries, and she's back now. And she's been doing a good job. So I'm eager to see how she continues to develop as well.
So like you said, the fall games are over. You have what we can call individuals now that take us until
you know, winter break in mid-December. And then after that, it's really what the kids do on their own in January when they're back on campus for reading period. And then we start off February 1.
And then February 16th is opening day. That's Temple, right?
Yeah, so the preseason gets shorter and shorter every year as the games move up. And, you know, I think that really is a challenge for the team, but something we're excited for. And having a lot of experience back should really help us be ready.
I mean, it used to be March 1st, right?
It used to be March 15th when I first came here. So we used to have a six-week preseason, which is now 2 weeks and 2 days this year.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking to Courtney, and we had the podcast with Courtney, and she was talking about, you know, November 6th is their first game. It used to be December 1st, and,
yeah,
you know, it's all earlier and more and everything else, and it's how it all has evolved.
Yeah, it is more spread out for us, though, which is nice. I mean, back in those days, when you started March 15th, you had 2 to 3 games every week, which just isn't doable with the way you play the game today and the recovery the athletes need and the scouting and preparation. So even though your season starts on February 16th, you're still putting in different elements, you know.
A lot of men's, like one of the things in the men's game now is like a real lack of willingness on the part of men's coaches to play midweek games. It seems like that's not as prevalent in the women's game.
Yeah, I think we play 5 midweeks. In order to get the number of games in, unless we want to go like a Friday, Sunday, we have to play the midweeks. And, you know, I think I like a midweek game. I love a Wednesday night game under the lights. It's pretty awesome. And when you're playing local competition, it's nice to get that in midweek. It just changes up how you structure your week from a practice and scouting perspective.
So this will be our podcast for the fall, and we'll start up again, you know, whenever you want. And you know, if you want to go like maybe the first week of practice, but we'll be here every week during the season.
Great.
So between now and then, I'm sure there's a lot of other things that go on. It's strength. We never even talked about strength and conditioning and how that's evolved through the years.
Yeah.
But we'll have a lot to talk about as the year comes along. Should be a good year for the Tigers. You know, like we've been talking about, a lot of players returning, a lot of freshmen are ready to step up and make an impact, and a lot of really good games coming up. So we'll be here each week with the Chris Saylor Show when the 2019 season rolls around.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jerry.
And thanks, Chris, for being with us here. And for Chris Saylor, I'm Jerry Price, and wanted to thank you for listening, and thank you all for your continued support of Princeton Women's Lacrosse.